Welcome to Songs That Don't Suck with your host, Mark Bradbourn.
Welcome to Songs That Don't Suck. I'm your host, Mark, and every week I listen to hundreds and hundreds of songs that have been newly released in the hopes to find a few that I can add to my playlists, and hopefully you can add to yours. So hey, thanks for listening, checking out the podcast, and hopefully I am successful in my mission and you're finding a few bands that you're really getting into. Before I get into new music, I've got a couple of thoughts to share. And before I share the thoughts, I gotta let you know something. You might notice that the audio quality of this podcast this week is a little bit off. I am not in my normal studio, so I am making do with what I have. So I appreciate your grace if the podcast is not up to the standard that you are used to. Despite all that, let's get into the show. If you caught this week's episode of Rock and Roll Autopsy, which I hope you're listening to Rock and Roll Autopsy. It's a fantastic podcast, even when I'm not on it. Anyway, you may have heard me and the boys chatting about how artists, when they tour, as of late, seem to be missing the Cleveland area. And I'm sure this is happening in other cities around the world as well. I had made the comment, kind of theorizing why this is, and I believe that they are using streaming data to see where their fan bases are. That, coupled with simple geography, you can make some really intelligent decisions around the logistics of a tour. So let's take the Midwest, for example. The cities are really close together. So from Cleveland to Pittsburgh, it's about a two-hour drive. From Cleveland to Columbus, it's about a two-hour drive. From Cleveland to Detroit, it's about a three-hour drive. So you can get to another city relatively quickly if the band is not playing in your town, but you want to see them. So it might make sense to do a Pittsburgh show and a Columbus show, skipping Cleveland, because Cleveland sits between those two. And if you're from Cleveland, you have two options to where you can go to that show. Now, it sucks for those of us in Cleveland because we have to drive 2 hours and it might mean we have to stay in a hotel and it adds extra cost to that concert experience. But if it's a show that you're a fan of, you're going to do that. And, you know, doing it in Columbus rather than doing it in Cleveland, you're going to pull other larger cities in Ohio. So you might pull from Toledo, you might pull from Dayton, you might pull from Cincinnati if you're not playing a Cincinnati date. So the goal obviously is to make as much money as possible on these shows. And if you can play two shows in larger venues versus three shows in smaller venues, it's just easier and better all around because you're going to make money in fewer shows. Now, there's other ways that artists are using streaming data as well. Now, this doesn't go for your really large touring acts where their concerts are, like, you know, super produced and, you know, lights and videos and all that stuff. This is more of your smaller artists, but they're actually looking at streaming data in those locales where they are touring, and they are customizing set lists to make sure that the favorite songs in those areas are getting played, especially if it's like a deep cut. So it's super cool because as a fan, you want to hear those songs live. And if it's not the hit or the single, it just might not happen. The other thing that artists are seeing in their streaming data when they are on tour is spikes in the areas that they are touring. Some artists are seeing up to 100% or more jump in their local streaming numbers. And it makes total sense. Like if I think about my behavior of streaming when I'm getting ready to go to a show, I always listen to that band more. If it's a band I'm not super familiar with, I might want to make sure that I know all the songs that are going to be played. So I might listen to that album a few times to get ready for the show. If it's a band that I know really well, I'm listening to their music to get ready, to get excited for the show. And sometimes after a show, I'll actually rebuild a set list so that I can relive the concert in the order that it was played. So it makes total sense to see these spikes in streaming numbers. And it just goes to show how important data is in an area where you really wouldn't think it is, right? Like when you think about music, it's art, right? It's creative, but it's a business. It's a music business. So using data to make the best decisions makes total sense. And as long as we're not weaponizing data, you know, and weaponizing technology, I think it's going to be really good. And I think it's only going to add to the fan experience. All right, let's get into new music for this week. I've got 5 tracks for you, so let's get into it. First song this week is The Cards by Sydney Sprague. I discovered Sydney Sprague last week. She and her band were opening for Spanish Love Songs here in Cleveland. And I ended up picking up her vinyl release that she did. She wrote it and produced it during the pandemic. And during the show, she played this new song and mentioned that it was coming out soon. And the song, I remember in the context of the set, was very different. The band actually left the stage and it was just her playing it. And it was a question at the time is it so new the band doesn't know it? Or is this actually the song? And it turns out that it was just the song. It's a very stripped down, not acoustic. She's playing it on electric guitar and there's a lot of different synth sounds. It's very layered, but it's just her and the guitar mainly. The vocals appear to be like doubled or tripled, so it's a very full sound, especially with the different keyboard sounds like I mentioned. And the guitar tuning is really weird. There's points in it where it almost feels like it's purposefully out of tune, but it's not. It just works. But this is a really pretty song. I think you'll enjoy listening to it, so go check out The Cards by Sydney Sprague. The second song this week is called Van Halen, and it's by The Old Revival. This song has a great bounce to it. And while the lyrics might perhaps be a little on the sad side because the artist is reflecting on their younger days, it made me laugh because the dude's in his mid-20s. He's talking about the time between when he was 17 and 25. But honestly, who among us hasn't had those moments where we pine for our younger days? And, you know, we remember how great it was having so much less responsibility. And, you know, it's no fun when we're kind of grinding under the weight of adulting. This is just a great, you know, great rock track. Like, I don't know if I would call it pop punk, but it's definitely got, you know, some of those DNA strands, but it's definitely poppy, pop rock. I really like the lead vocal, like just the sound of his voice. It fits the style of the music really well. A little bit of a growl, but most of the times it's just a solid rock voice. Honestly, these guys aren't breaking any new ground in the rock space. You know, it's just a solid song, and I definitely want to check out more from The Old Revival. The third song this week is She Wants Me To by Wilt. It feels like it's difficult for female vocalists to really differentiate themselves, because like 9 times out of 10 or even 99 times out of 100, I feel like female rock vocalists always sound the same. Like they're cut from the same cloth. And it's why I know that I have so few female rock vocalists on the podcast. In this case, she's very different. The lead singer of Wilt has a very unique voice for my ears. There's definitely a 90s influence, maybe with like bands like Garbage. Voice has a little bit of grit to it, but it works so well in the context of this band. I feel like a lot of times female vocalists might try too hard to make their voice gritty and it just becomes overdone, but definitely not the case here. I also think it helps that she's singing more in an alto range, so like, you know, lower than, you know, the high screamy vocals. It just blends with the band, blends with the music style a lot better. The production of this track is really good too. They're mixing kind of a processed drum sound with an acoustic drum sound in parts of the song, and it really does a nice job breaking it up. And it's just a really nice sonic landscape that she paints. So definitely check out Wilt. The track is called She Wants Me To. The fourth song this week is Tell Me Why You Do That by Grace Bowers and the Hodgepodge. This was a really fun find this week. As I listened to it, I was drawing parallels with bands like Parliament Funkadelic, mainly because it's just got this old school fun sound that you just don't hear a lot. Like it's disappeared from the musical landscape. It's got great musical breakdowns, fantastic horn lines, another great female vocalist here. And it's funky and it just feels good. It's got what I like to describe as a gang vocal, where basically everybody in the band appears to be singing and it just really fills out the sound and it makes it sound fun. This song, I will guarantee that you will bob your head, you will tap your foot, and it will put you in a good mood. It's just a great, great song for that. So definitely check out Tell Me Why You Do That from Grace Bowers and the Hodgepodge. The fifth and final song this week is What's an Hour Really Worth by The Dangerous Summer. When I first saw this track listed, I was really intrigued by the title, honestly. You know, what is an hour really worth? It's one of those introspective questions that when you're working for a living, you might ask yourself if what I'm doing is really worth what I'm being paid. Now, ultimately, this is not what the song is about, or at least what it feels like it's about to me. But that's where my mind went. Stylistically, the song really reminds me of bands like Jimmy Eat World. It's definitely in that alt rock vein or genre, if you will. They are a three-piece band, and for most of the song, it doesn't sound like they're adding anything in their recording that would be unnatural, you know, as far as like extra instruments and things like that. But there's a later part kind of in the bridge and after the bridge where they mix different rhythms from the verses and the choruses together and layer some things around, which sounds really, really cool. You're going to find that towards the end of the song, like the last minute or so. Doing a little bit of research, these guys have actually been at it a while. Apparently they signed their first record deal when they came out of high school. First album came back in like 2009. So I always find it interesting when I discover bands that have been around for a really long time and they continue to put out music. And it just really goes to show like how difficult it can be to kind of break through and catch somebody's ear. But hey, I hope that a few of these tracks have caught your ear this week. That is it for this week. As always, spread the word to your fellow music fans. Follow the show on social media, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, X, Threads. Anywhere you find music, you will find me. I'm on all the podcast platforms. You can check out the website at songsthatdontsuck.net. You can check the show notes there. There's links to all the music in the show notes. So like whatever platform you listen to music on, you will find links to listen to these tracks and get them into your ear holes. So with that, support these artists. And
thanks for listening. And until next week, keep searching for and listening to songs that don't suck.